Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you remember back during the pandemic when we were talking about frontline heroes and we were talking about essential workers, especially those meatpacking folks who just got slammed. In fact, the one place in South Dakota, as I remember the story going, you know, they went from like 0 to 80 in a couple of days. And then, you know, within a month or so, up to over 1,200 people got sick. In fact, you know, you go to the one in Iowa, I think it was Iowa, where you had supervisors who were betting on how many people they could get sick. It's kind of scary to think. But now you've got these, again, people we were told were frontline heroes and essential who lived through all of that. They made it through. And now they're saying, hey, we want better wages. We want better hours. We want better conditions. We want safer conditions. We got the title, hero, frontline hero, essential. Now treat us like that. Here's the thing. They're negotiating their new contract in a Smithfield contract in South Dakota. 99% of them said no. 99% said no to the latest offer by the company. In fact, they just took a strike vote. 98% of them said, we're ready to go on strike. And here to share some thoughts on why this is, what's going on, I've asked Cooper Caraway to come talk with us. He's the president of the South Dakota AFL-CIO. Cooper, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So, you know, I look back to, the heart of the pandemic, all the stories of, like I said, frontline heroes and essential workers. And we were patting people on the back. In fact, some companies even threw out some pennies and some bonuses. I think even Smithfield gave out some bonuses for people to come to work while they were sick. Now when it's contract time, we're not seeing that same kind of love. Are you surprised by that?
Yes and no. So, it takes quite a bit of audacity to look at the workers who have gone through the year that they've gone through, watched 1,200 of their coworkers get sick, watched their workplace become the number one hotspot in the country, number one on a list that was just jails. The rest was just jails. Smithfield was the only hotspot that was a workplace. Everything else on the list were prisons, jails, things like this. And so this is a company that that looked at their workers who spent this year watching over 1,200 of their coworkers get sick with the coronavirus, watched four of their coworkers die, watched people all around them in the community get sick and things like that. And they persevered through all that. They made changes through all that. They pushed the company to take safety precautions when the company was taking their cue from our governor and hesitating on taking safety precautions. They showed one of the most courageous showed perseverance and things like this for a year, really had each other's back. And now you have this company who called them essential, called them heroes, but now say, we're going to take away your 15-minute break. Now they say, we're not going to give you a pay increase, even though right down the road, they're starting at $19 an hour instead of $17 an hour right here in Sioux Falls. They're saying, we're going to limit your unpaid time off so that the refugees who work there can't go visit their families in Africa or Asia. It's quite an alarming sense of audacity from the company.
Yeah, at the end of it, it's all about profit for them. And these are people who, as I was looking at some of the numbers, they're doing fairly well. It's not like they're poor.
No, they're doing good. So far, the union has, in past contract negotiations, the union's secured them good pay. If you're working there 20, 30 years, you're making, $30, $40 an hour or something like that. You're making good pay. The union has done a good job of looking out for the workers. And all they're asking for are just little things. Don't take away my 15-minute break and have the starting base pay at $17. Move it to $19 like they have it at the JBS plant 20 minutes down the road.
Yeah, I'm talking about the company. I'm talking about the company. The company seems to, they're not poor.
The company's a multi-billion dollar company. It was bought out by a Chinese owned company a few years ago, 2011 or so. So this is a multi-billion dollar company. And so they have almost unlimited resources. And so it's almost comical that a multi-billion dollar company would sit and argue over a 15-minute break.
So what is at the end of it, what's the game plan? I just talked with, a couple who are on strike down in Brookwood, Alabama at the Warrior Met Coal Company down there. And they're like, look, you know, this is union busting. This is what's going on here. Can we say the same thing about what's going on in your neck of the woods?
If it is, it's a really bad idea. This is a strong union. This is a 4,000 person strong union. You know, they have upwards of 90%. South Dakota is one of the original right to work states. You don't got to be in the union if you don't want to. You can scab all day long if you'd like. But that plant down there is upwards of 90% union membership. It's one of the strongest unions in a right to work state I've ever seen. So if their intention through these negotiations is to be difficult and drag their feet to bust that union, then they're really barking up the wrong tree and making a grave error.
No, because, you know, because I was going to ask about that, because some of the things that I've seen, there is a culture of people being in the union, and because they understand it's a difficult job. It's a job that you need protection and you need to fight for better conditions. Because one thing I think, again, as a society, we learned is that that's a tough job. It's a dangerous job. It's a crowded job. It's a job that I don't think many people want to do, which is why I think you guys get paid fairly well. But you do need your time off. You do need you need the conditions part of this to get better as well, especially because you came out of this pandemic. You want to make sure if this happens again, I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that you have something in place to make sure you don't have to relive the nightmare you just went through.
That's right. And it's because of the workers that things didn't get even worse. You know, before Smithfield was a hotspot, the workers, because of their unique position, as many of them being refugees from Asia, from Africa, from other places, they were getting word out before the pandemic hit South Dakota very hard. They were getting word from their families of how hard the pandemic was hitting them in their home countries. And so they sounded the alarm early on in 2020 and pushed Smithfield to make these changes, and Smithfield didn't pay any attention to them. They brushed them off within 6 weeks of that, it was the number one hotspot in the United States.
Now, as I said, the contract that was offered by Smithfield, the four-year contract, was rejected by 99% of the union workers that voted in the election. And now the strike vote, 98% of them have said they're going to go on strike. Do you think this is going to move the company back towards, you know, potentially settling this? Or do you foresee a potential of a strike?
I mean, if these folks, management's folks that are coming to the table have more than two or three brain cells in their head, then this ought to lead them to coming to a compromise and understanding that this is not the year you can push these workers around. These workers are determined to be treated as essential. They're determined to be treated as heroes. And so, I mean, I firmly believe that there's at least one person on management's negotiation team that is smart enough to realize that this is the year where management is going to have to make a concession or two.
Because here's the thing. I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to, this is the year that I expect a lot of strike activity to go on, as people are saying, look, we've been underpaid for too long. Conditions have gotten too bad. We don't have the benefits we think we should have. And finally, people are waking up to the reality that we're not going to take crummy desperation wage jobs that are in deplorable, dangerous conditions anymore. We're just not going back to 2019. We want to move forward. And the tool that people have is organizing, joining and forming unions. And ultimately, if you have to, and I hope nobody ever does, but going on strike.
That's right. The only power that working people have in this country is the power to organize, the power to stick together, and the power to withhold their labor. You know, one of the great union leaders said that all the working class has to do to bring the bosses to their knees is stick their hands in their pockets. And that guy was exactly right.
No. And are you seeing more of this kind of activity in your neck of the woods? Obviously, as you pointed out, South Dakota is one of the original no rights at work states. Are you seeing a lot of this kind of, especially among younger workers, are you seeing a lot of this kind of talk?
Yeah, especially younger workers, you know, they're being much more courageous with their labor activity. They're much more willing to organize. They're much more willing to take risks. They're much more willing to make big demands at the negotiation table, to rewrite labor laws at the negotiation table, to kind of rewrite the workday at the negotiation table and make these kind of big asks and whatnot. And you're seeing it not just in South Dakota, but all over the place. You know, I heard you were talking to our brothers down down in Brothers and Sisters down in Alabama. You know, I was on their fundraiser. They had a national fundraiser. I spoke at their national fundraiser and raised, you know, 60 some odd thousand dollars for that. And for the workers down there. And I think you're seeing a heightened sense of labor militancy and a heightened sense of courage with all these new younger workers joining. You know, I think before the pandemic hit, the several years, 2018, 2019, you know, those were one of the first years that the labor movement had seen net growth in a long time, in many decades. And 75% of the new union members were under 35 years old. So you have this whole new generation of folks who grew up in high school, who all they know how to do is organize. During high school, you know, that was Obama's election, and they organized a lot for that. After that, there was a school walkouts over immigration reform in 2010, 2011. Then you had the Occupy Wall Street thing around that same time. And then you had the growth of the Black Lives Matter protests and everything. So these kids, they're joining the workforce. They're getting out of high school. They're getting out of college. And all they know in their heads is when there's a problem, organizing is going to solve it. And they're joining their unions, and they're bringing that sense of militancy and courage and passion, and they're bringing it into the labor movement at the time when it was desperately needed.
No, absolutely. And but for me, as a labor guy, and you know, I've been a union member for over 30 years, the history of labor is something that we do our labor history in two here on the program to educate people about what it took in the past to get where we are. And sadly, I don't see that the younger generation has the understanding of what the history had been. But there's also part of me that goes, maybe they don't need it. Maybe they just need to say, we're not taking it anymore.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing right now. What they're doing right now is saying, we're not taking it anymore. If the current labor leaders in the AFL-CIO and outside of the AFL-CIO, the ones who have been in there, folks like you, for folks who have been in the movement for 30, 40 years, the best thing those folks can do is to help guide the younger generations and show them the history and say, look, you know, when I was 20 years old, I threw rocks, you know, and this got us this. When I was 20 years old, you know, we walked out and we did this and things like that. Because the young folks, we have the energy and we have the courage. The worst thing that could happen is the older generations try to crush that energy and that courage and that militancy. What we need is leadership that is willing to embrace the courage and passion and also do a little bit of educating on the labor history, because that's all this younger generation needs. Add that labor history with the courage and passion, and we'll have a whole new rejuvenated labor movement.
And we need it because, you know, I've often said to some of my contemporaries, if you will, people my age, that, you know, the reason this generation's important is they grew up watching their parents struggle. They grew up watching their parents get their pensions stolen. They grew up watching their parents seeing their wages get outsourced and shipped overseas. They grew up suffering through what sadly has happened to the working class of this country, and they don't have to take it anymore, which is why I think we're seeing the kind of change that we're seeing, especially in the low wage sector. Now, I'm sure you've been hearing the same kind of talk that I've been hearing. You know, we got a labor shortage. You got a bunch of people who don't want to go back to poverty wage jobs, and that's a wage shortage they claim. I say it simply, it's a wage shortage. You pay people, they'll show up.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, as far as I can tell, almost the entire country is currently involved in protected concerted activity by refusing to work for poverty wages. Anytime you see a sign that says, oh, well, nobody wants to work anymore. Okay, good. What I see is a sign saying, okay, all the workers in this neighborhood are engaging in protected concerted activity by refusing to work at this place who's going to pay them poverty wages.
I love that.
And I think if we see more and more of that, then the better off we'll all be.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. I did want to switch the conversation a little bit. You've got kind of a crazy governor out there. You know, the one who said that, you know, housing and pipes, that's not really infrastructure, because it's which is kind of kooky, because the last time I checked, my house has pipes. Do they have pipes in houses in South Dakota?
They absolutely do. They have pipes, and many of them are put in there by the United Association of Plumbers and Pipe Fitters. And so they're good, strong union pipes, and they'll last a long time. And they are part of infrastructure. I've never our governor uses some funny definitions for things like personal freedom and liberties and infrastructure that I'd never quite heard of before, except for when I was forced to read Atlas Shrugged in high school. But outside of that, I'd never heard anybody else use those definitions of liberty, freedom, or infrastructure.
Yeah, I guess she's getting a new jet. Is that coming? You guys paying for a new jet for the governor?
What she likes to do is, she needs a new jet because she spends very little time here in South Dakota. Our governor is very rarely in the neighborhood. She spends her time jet setting around, meeting with Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago, and conspiring to commit more insurrections, or hanging out on the jet of the MyPillow guy, or whatever else she does. But she goes around doing fundraisers in North Carolina and Texas and Florida, way more than she spends any time here.
And the taxpayers get to pick that up. Just bizarre times we live in. But Cooper, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work. I love the work that you're doing. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you, brother. All power to the working class.
There you go. Cooper Caraway, president of the South Dakota AFL-CIO. Make sure you check out their website. We'll get links out on social media, sd.aflcio.org. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.